Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. Of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGant. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by Carolina Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis. He's going to talk about his return from his ACL injury. So we're going to talk to Thomas Davis about that and also the upcoming NFL season. Also, we're going to be joined by BoxingScene.com's Cliff Rold, who's going to stop on by and talk about the fight that was, the controversy that was, Pacquiao Bradley and all the things and the aftermath of Pacquiao Bradley. And so we're going to talk to Cliff about that. And I'm a guy, in terms of that particular fight, I really don't want to see it again. But we're going to talk about that as the show goes on. I want to start right now with the NBA Finals. Couple off days, and right now I'm having NBA Finals withdrawal. I'm having NBA withdrawal right now. I mean, first of all, these playoffs have been great. And secondly, these NBA Finals have been great. I mean, the competitiveness you have in those two games, between those two teams, between those two superstars, LeBron and Durant, and then you got, oh, by the way, Dwayne Wade and Russell Westbrook. And, oh, by the way, you got Chris Bosh and James Harden. So you got a lot of talent there on display and on the biggest stage. And if you're David Stern, if you're the NBA, right now you have to be giddy. You have to be just so excited, so happy. What's going on right now with the NBA, you have to be very, very excited if you're the commissioner of this league. I mean, you have it now, and a lot of people have been talking now that we may have seen or may be seeing these two superstars, Kevin Durant, LeBron James. We may have it now where we may have the next Magic and Bird for the next few years. I mean, what Oklahoma City is building and built, they're going to be tough to beat. And obviously what Miami has with the three superstars, two superstars and a star in Chris Bosh, what Miami has there, you know they're going to be coming as well. You know that they're going to be a team to be reckoned with for years to come. So and right now you have it where this year you have the MVP in LeBron James and you have the runner-up in Kevin Durant. So it's a perfect thing if you're David Stern, if you're everybody dealing in this, who is a part of the National Basketball Association, which is the NBA, you have to be excited right now. And as a fan of the NBA, I'm very excited right now. This league, the possibilities in terms of the superstars that are in this league right now, the Kevin Durant, the young superstars, or Westbrook, who has superstar written all over him. Obviously, LeBron James. I mean, there's so much talent in this league right now. So much talent. Derrick Rose. So much talent in this league right now. Young talent, too. So much. Kyrie Irving in Cleveland, a guy who looked great, rookie of the year, obviously. He's looking good. So much talent. So much talent. So much talent. the Dwight Howards of the world. I mean, and you look at these playoffs this year, you're missing some stars, some superstars, and Derrick Rose and Dwight Howard. You're missing those guys. Those guys are not here and have not played in the playoffs. So you're missing two superstars in these playoffs, and we're still having a great, great playoff. A great, great playoff. And we still have the established stars, the Kobe Bryants, the Dwight Howards of the world. I mean, Carmelo Anthony. I mean, there is so much talent in this league. And I could watch, and I would love to see this Heat-Thunder matchup. I could watch this each and every year in terms of an NBA Finals matchup. I could watch this each and every year with no problem. I'll sign up for it now. If I can sign up, if I had to sign up for three straight years, including this one, of Thunder, Heat, NBA Finals, guess what? Sign me up right now. This is some great basketball on display here. The talent that is on display here is second to none. As the Sacramento Kings announcer likes to say, and I don't have his name, but if you don't like this, then you don't like basketball. If you don't like that, then you don't like basketball. And that pretty much is the bottom line here. It doesn't get any better than this. The drama, the theater, the talent, all that's going on in these games is second to none. You're missing out right now. If you're not watching this, then you're obviously not a fan of NBA basketball. I'll go a step further. If you're not watching this, you're obviously not a fan of basketball, period. Period. Because this is some big-time basketball here. This is basketball played at the highest level, played by the best athletes. I mean, you can make the argument right now, the two best players in the game are on display in this series. The two best players in the game are on display in this series. Kevin Durant, LeBron James. You could even make an argument that four of the top five players in this game, and it obviously, it's, you can make the argument. I'm not saying it's going to be a winning argument, but you can make the argument that four of the top players in this game, in the league, in the NBA, possibly in the world, not possibly, in the world, are on display here with LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Dwayne Wade, and Russell Westbrook. On display here, you have quite possibly the four best players in the world. In the world. And you possibly have it on display here in this year's NBA Finals. And that's saying a lot. And again, oh, by the way, we've only played two games. So I have Miami winning this thing in six. But I'm hoping for seven games. I want to see five more games of this. I want to see five more games of this. That's what I want to see. I want to see five more games of this. I mean, so, again, I had Miami winning this thing in six. But if you told me right now I could sign up for 5 more games and my prediction would be wrong, I'm signing up for 5 more games of this. And the atmosphere, and obviously you're not going to get the same type of atmosphere that you got in Oklahoma City and Miami. You're not going to get that same type of atmosphere for games 3, 4, and 5. And you could argue you're not going to get that same atmosphere anywhere in the NBA. The atmosphere that you get in Oklahoma City, it may not be anywhere in this league. So you're not going to get this atmosphere anywhere you go. But Miami is definitely and clearly a step down in terms of atmosphere. Clearly a step down. And I've said this all along. I don't believe Miami deserves having superstars like LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. They don't deserve it. They just don't deserve it. They're just not passionate enough fans to deserve those guys. They're just not passionate enough to deserve the likes of Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. They don't deserve that. Cleveland deserved LeBron James. Cleveland deserved LeBron James. And that's where LeBron James should be. Especially where I want him to be. He doesn't have to be. I mean, that's ultimately his call. It's his right as a free agent to decide where he wanted to go. But what I'm saying is all in all, Miami doesn't deserve to have superstars like Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. But anyway, you're not going to get the same type of atmosphere that you got in Oklahoma City for games 3, 4, and 5 in Miami. You're not going to get it. So don't expect it. Don't expect it. I mean, you have Magic Johnson saying this is the loudest he's ever heard a building. And Oklahoma City was undefeated at home in these playoffs before Thursday night. After Thursday night, they suffered their first loss at home in these playoffs. And looking back on Thursday night, and again, another great basketball game. Another back-and-forth type of basketball game late in the basketball game. You had it, again, where Miami jumped out to a great start, had the early lead, 17-point lead there in the second quarter, got off to an 18-2 start. So Miami got off to the great start, got off to a great lead, and Oklahoma City has struggled with that. They struggled with getting off to great starts throughout the course of these playoffs. They have struggled with that. But Miami jumped out, big-time lead, 18-2, and 17-point, including a 17-point lead in that second quarter, and they were in complete control of that game early on. In complete control. And I said this, and I heard Miami talk about this also. They talked about they're at their best. Boss, I heard Boss say that. They're at their best when their backs are against the wall. That's when this team is at their best, when their backs are against the wall. And you look at it, and I talked about game two. This was a must-win situation for the Miami Heat. If they lost this game, If they would have lost this game, this series was over. This series would have been over if they would have lost this game. The series would have been over. No way with the 2-3-2 format that the Miami Heat were going. No way it was going to happen. No way that the Miami Heat were going to win those, all three of those games. No way. No way. And I believe it's only been done one time, and that was in 2001. I have to check this, but that was in 2001 when the Lakers swept through the Sixers in those three consecutive games at First Union Center when it was called at the time. But I think that was the only time where a team swept through those three games. It doesn't happen, folks. It doesn't happen. And so the reality is with the 2-3-2 format, Miami lost, they were done. they were done. Because the thing is, I expect Miami to win two out of these three games in Miami. They're not going to win all three. Oklahoma City is too good of a team to lose all three games. I expect Miami to come out and win game three. I expect OKC to come out and win game four. And then I expect Miami to come out and win game five and six in Oklahoma City and put this thing away. You can afford to go down two games. You can afford to go down two games. You can afford to do it with the 2-2-1-1-1 format. But when you go down 2-3, when you go down 2-0 with the 2-3-2 format, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. Very difficult to win. Very difficult to win. Very difficult. Very difficult to win. And so, we'll see. We'll see, and we'll see what happens these next three games, and it's going to be an interesting three games. Going to be an interesting three games. An interesting three games, and I hope that the games are as good as they have been in these first two. I hope these next three are as good as they were. I hope these next three are as good as these first two. I hope, but we'll see. We'll see. We shall see. And I was mistaken. Miami did win back in 2006. Miami did win three games at home against the Dallas Mavericks. They won all three of those games to put away that series, to put them in position to put away the series in game six in Dallas. So it has been done, but that was done by the home team, and Miami is the home team here, so it could be done, but I don't think it will be done because Oklahoma City is just too good of a basketball team for that to happen. Just too good of a team for that to happen. Too good. Too good, and these teams are so evenly matched. So evenly matched here. These teams are so close. In terms of talent, so close. I think from top to bottom, you would have to say OKC is the better team. But you can make the argument in terms of the star power that Miami has. And I think you can make the argument with a lot of teams against Miami. I mean, because Miami, it showed when Chris Bosh went out. Not a lot of depth. And the team struggled. So, from top to bottom, OKC is the better team. OKC is the better team. Top to bottom, that is. But I mean, but in terms of LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, they are the great equalizers here. They are the equalizers. And I talked about it on Thursday night. Putting Chris Bosh in the starting lineup was the move to make for Miami. And I talked about the reasons why, and in some respect, putting Chris Bosh on the floor, if you're OKC, do you now go small? Do you take Perkins out of the starting lineup? Because Perkins really hasn't given OKC nothing. He really hasn't given them anything in this series. And with Bosh in there as the starting center, it's not going to change. It's not going to change. It's not going to change. I mean, Perkins, 4 points, 8 rebounds in game two. And then he had a performance in game one, 4 points, 7 rebounds. So Kendrick Perkins really has not been a factor. And you're not going to expect Kendrick Perkins to be a factor on the offensive end, but he really wasn't a big-time factor on the boards, especially in Game 2, where and even Ibaka in Game 2, where Chris Bosh pretty much out-rebounded the both of them by himself, single-handedly. Chris Bosh, 15 boards on Thursday night. Ibaka with 4 boards. Kendrick Perkins with 8 boards. So Chris Bosh out-rebounded Perkins and Ibaka 15-12. So not only did Chris Bosh come in and gave Miami that extra scoring threat, another scoring option, the option that they missed throughout the course, well, ever since Game 1 against Indiana. Ever since they lost Chris Bosh, they lost that size that they had, that they lost that scoring size, a guy that can open things up for LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. That next option, they lost it when Bosh went out in Game 1. But he's back. And they put him in the starting lineup in Game 2, which was the right move. It was the right move, and he responded. He was a presence in that ballgame. 15 rebounds, 16 points, 2 block shots. He was a presence for Miami in that game. Down low, he controlled the glass for Miami. So he was a presence in that particular ballgame for the Miami Heat. He was a presence. And his ability, again, to score the basketball, something you weren't getting from Udonis Haslem. His ability to do that really opens it up for LeBron James, really opens it up for Dwayne Wade, and truly opens it up for everybody else. How about Shane Battier? 17 points in Game 1, comes back with another strong performance in Game 2, 17 points. So he's been the difference so far. He's been a difference in this series for Miami. Been a difference for Miami in this series. I mean, coming back, he's going to get his looks. And that's the thing. Battier is going to continue to get his looks. Him and Chalmers are going to continue to get their looks. And Chalmers struggled a little bit in Game 2, 1-for-7 in that particular ball game. Yeah, played fairly well in Game 1, 12 points, but in Game 2 struggled a little bit, 1-for-7 from the field. So he struggled in Game 2. But those guys are going to get their looks from downtown. They're going to get their looks. And if those guys can continue to hit those threes, it's going to be trouble. It could be trouble for Oklahoma City. If those guys continue to hit the threes and continue to be effective from downtown, it's going to be a problem. But in that second half, I mean, and then Kevin Durant, a beast in the fourth quarters, an absolute beast. 68 total points for Kevin Durant in the first 2 games. 68 points. But here's the telling stat. 33 of those points have come in the fourth quarter. 33 have come in the fourth quarter. That's getting it done, folks. That's getting it done, folks. 33 of his 68 points have come in the fourth quarter. 33 of them have come in the fourth quarter. That's pretty much half of his points have come when it matters most in the fourth quarter. Half of his points have come when it matters most. 16 points in Game 2, 17 in Game 1. 33 of those big points have come in the fourth quarter. That's big. That's big. That's big. That's big. 33 of his 68 points. And I got to keep repeating it because that's just big time. That's just big time. That's big time. In the fourth quarter, that's just flat out big time. Flat out big time. And he was big time, and he was coming. Kevin Durant was coming. He was coming in Oklahoma City. You just saw him coming in that fourth quarter. They were coming. They were coming. And it looked like Miami, LeBron James hit a big shot out, that big bank shot with about a minute 30 to go. That was a big shot. Oklahoma City was coming. He misses that shot. Who knows what happens in that particular ball game? But that was big by LeBron James to hit that bank shot and to put Miami up five. Put Miami up five and put Miami in good position to win the game. And then Miami was in control. They're up five, and Dwayne Wade turns the ball over, trying to break the trap. Kevin Durant hits the open three-pointer, and that cut the lead to two. That cut the lead to two. And that was big. And then LeBron James comes down. He misses the three at the top of the key. Oklahoma City get the ball back. Kevin Durant goes baseline. LeBron James D's him up. Some say fouled him. Kevin Durant missed the shot. LeBron James comes back. Hits two big free throws, 12 for 12 from the free throw line. LeBron had been struggling from the free throw line throughout these playoffs and throughout the year, but he was 12 for 12. Thursday night and hit two big ones to ice the ball game. And the big controversy was whether or not LeBron James fouled Kevin Durant. And it's really not whether or not. He fouled him. He fouled him. But he got away with it. He got away with it. He fouled him. There's no getting around it. He fouled him. Like he banged him about 3 to 4 times as Durant was putting up the shot. But to give Kevin Durant a lot of credit, post game, the questions were asked, and he pretty much said over and over, he's got to make that shot. He's got to make that shot. He was fouled, yes. A lot of schools of thought here at play, though. I mean, theoretically, as an official, your job in terms of making calls is advantage, disadvantage. Does LeBron James gain a competitive advantage by hitting Kevin Durant? That's really the bottom line. As an official, a lot of things at play here. As an official, advantage, disadvantage. You have to make that decision. I would say, yes, LeBron gained a competitive advantage by hitting Kevin Durant with the elbow there. And it wasn't, obviously it wasn't a wind it up type of elbow. It was just, he was banging him. He banged him. Another school of thought here is whether or not in that particular situation, do you – no whistles there. No whistles at that point. End of the game, you let the players decide the ball game. As an official, you don't get involved there. You let the players play it out. And I'm one. I mean, if it's a foul, it's a foul. But at the same time, I hate to see an official get in the way of a ball game. We hate to see the game be decided by free throws. But just imagine now if Durant, if the foul is called there and Durant does sink those two free throws, which percentage-wise, you would think he would do that. But let's say he does sink those two free throws. What happens then? What happens then? But you got to say this. LeBron James has at least quieted his critics for the next few days. people can shut up now for the next few days. Because what LeBron James did. Not only was he clutch with that bank shot there in the fourth quarter, but he was clutch with his defense, whether it's a foul or not a foul. He was there. He defended. It was a clean play because the referee did not call it. So it is what it is. And then he comes back and hits two big free throws to ice the ball game. And I said it earlier, LeBron James, it's not fair, the criticism that he has been receiving, especially in game one. If you average 7 points, if you average 7 points each quarter, that comes out to 28 points. And last I checked, if you're averaging 28 points a game, scoring leader was Kevin Durant. I believe he averaged around 28 points a game. In his postseason, the scoring leader has been LeBron James, 30 points a game in his postseason. 30 points a game in his postseason. And, oh, by the way, another 9.5 boards. So 30 and darn near 10 throughout the course of these playoffs for LeBron James. 30 and darn near 10. And, oh, by the way, another 5 assists for LeBron James. 30 and 10 for this man. So it's hard to criticize someone who's averaging 30 and 10. I don't think you can criticize someone who's averaging 30 and 10. I don't know how you could do that. I don't know how you could do that. And Kevin Durant averaged 28 points a game in the regular season. He won the scoring title. So, be as it may, if you score 7 points a quarter, 7 times 4 is 28. So, if LeBron James, you score 7 points in that first quarter, in the fourth quarter of game one, if he continues to score, if he scores 7 points a quarter, that's 28 points a game. In the regular season, that would have won you a scoring title. That would have won you a scoring title. So this criticism of LeBron James, oh, he's got to do it in the fourth quarter and so on and so forth. The criticism that he got last year was justified in the NBA Finals. It was justified. He flat out disappeared in the NBA Finals last year. But the first three rounds, he was the best player on the team for the Miami Heat, the best player on the team. And the first three rounds this year has been the best player on the team. And the first two games of the NBA Finals has been the best player on the team. So I really don't know. Well, I mean, I know what people want in terms of they want him to be quote-unquote clutch. But being clutch and doesn't always mean the last few minutes of the game. You could be clutch and avoid those last few minutes of the game by how you play in the other minutes before the final minutes of a game. So, say what you want to say about LeBron James. He's averaging 30 points, 30.8 points per game in these playoffs, and another 9.5 rebounds a game. That, my friends, is getting it done. That, my friends, is getting it done. And he's gotten it done. He's gotten it done the first three rounds of last year. He just didn't do what he had to do in the finals. But this year right now, He's getting it done. He's getting it done. He is getting it done. LeBron James is doing what he has to do in these playoffs, averaging 31 points a game in the first two games of these NBA Finals. And, oh, by the way, somebody else stepped up Thursday night, Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade came back and played like the Dwayne Wade we all know and love. He was big for Miami as well. And that's what they're going to need moving forward. They're going to need Dwayne Wade to have big-time efforts. He came back with 24 big points for the Miami Heat. 10 for 20 from the field, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. He was good. He was good. He was good. We'll see if he comes back now. And we don't know if he's right in terms of his knee. It's been drained a couple of times in these playoffs, so we don't know how right he is. But he did come back with 24 big points in these 3 days. The 3 days off, are big for Dwayne Wade. That's big to get some rest. You need it. You're going to need it. You're going to need it. You're definitely going to need it. You're going to need that rest. And Dwayne Wade is getting the rest for these 3 days. 3 days of rest to get himself right for game three, for a big game three. For a big game three. So now he has a few days now to get himself right, get himself well rested and ready to go. But throughout the course of these playoffs, and I want to go to look back to LeBron for a second, and just talking about the criticism, because throughout the course of these playoffs, in big spots where the Miami Heat backs were against the wall, LeBron James has come out and put up big-time performances. He's put up big-time performances. When the team's backs, when the Miami Heat team, when their backs were against the wall, LeBron James came out and did some great things. How about game four against the Indiana Pacers? A game where the Miami Heat were down 2-1. And their backs were against the wall. Dwayne Wade coming off a hard performance in game three. But it looked like their backs were against the wall. Chris Bosh was out. And the team was struggling. Their backs were against the wall. Lost game two. Lost game three. But game four, LeBron James came out, and LeBron James was a monster. And Dwayne Wade as well, when their backs were against the wall, he came out and was a monster as well. But LeBron James was the star of that game with 40 points and 18 big rebounds. He was the star of that game. And he was the reason that the Miami Heat were able to win that game. Dwayne Wade played well as well. He played well too. But LeBron James was the guy. So when the backs were against the wall, guess what happened? LeBron James stepped up. When the backs were against the wall, LeBron James stepped up. They stepped up. And so, in doing so and stepping up, the Miami Heat were able to continue and move on. But that was a big game by LeBron James. 40 points, 18 rebounds. That's a monster performance. But it gets better. It gets better. Game six against the Boston Celtics. Miami Heat coming off a tough loss at home in game five. Backs against the wall, TD Garden, revved up and ready to go. And guess what happens? LeBron James comes out, stoic and stone-faced, and put up 45 big points to go along with 15 big rebounds. And, oh, by the way, he handed out another 5 assists. And he was just on it in that particular game. Backs, again, against the wall for the Miami Heat. And guess what happens? LeBron James comes out swinging. LeBron James comes out swinging and just played a great, great game. One of the better games in postseason history. 45, 15, and 5. Wilt Chamberlain-like numbers for the King. And I think I can call him the King here after that performance. That was King-like. That was King-like. And, oh, by the way, he comes back in Game 7. Coming off a 45-point performance. He comes back in Game 7, 31-12. And hit a big three in that particular ball game down the stretch there. And he got the Miami Heat all the way to the NBA Finals. Again, back-to-back. So I make all those points to talk about those particular games to say this. Get off his back. If he doesn't win, you can jump back on, and I can understand that. But let this whole thing play out. The guy has been masterful and has been clutch and has been big time when big time was needed. Big time against Indiana, down 2-1, 40-18. Big time against the Boston Celtics, down 3-2, 45-15-5. What else do you want from the guy? Did you want him to hand out the Gatorade and the towels to the players? Did you want him to do that as well? I mean, what else do you want from him? What do you want from me? I mean, what else do you want from the guy? What else do you want from him? You want him to go sell some popcorn? I mean, what else do you want? What else do you want? He's done it all. He was big, has been big, when big was needed. And you can go back to game two. Backs against the wall. When big was needed, guess who stepped up? On not only the offensive end, and you can call it a foul if you want, but he did step up on the defensive end. The foul was not called. So, what do you want from him? What else do you want from this man? Other than winning the championship, and that's going to be big. I mean, he put so much pressure on himself when he made the decision to go to Miami. When he made that decision to go to South Beach, he put so much pressure on himself. And it's going to be hard. It's hard. I mean, the thing about it is, well, you get paid the big bucks. You're a superstar. You put this on yourself when you decided to do what you did and leave Cleveland. But I think the kind of pressure we're putting on this guy and the expectations that we have, in some respect, are reasonable, but in some respect are unreasonable, especially when you talk about 40-18 in a game where you were down 2-1, you go down 3-1, and you can, in a lot of ways, statistically speaking, pretty much say you're going to lose that series. And then you come back down 3-2, backs against the wall in an elimination game. You lose, you go home, and you come out and respond with 45-15-5. There's really nothing else he can do other than win this championship. And that's what it's all about, truly. Heard Stephen A. Smith say this. It's not about what happens for LeBron James in the regular season. It's not even what happens to LeBron James in the first two rounds of the playoffs. It really matters what happens in terms of him in these NBA finals. In terms of him coming up big, being big, and doing big things in these NBA finals. That truly is what matters in talking about LeBron James. Nothing really matters other than that. Other than that, nothing really matters. It's all about winning a championship. And I want to go to Oklahoma City right now. And I want to go more specifically to Russell Westbrook. I mean, he was criticized by Magic Johnson after the first half. Magic Johnson pretty much came out and said that was the worst first half he's seen out of a point guard in NBA Finals play. And Magic criticized Westbrook for forcing the issue, forcing the action early on in that particular ball game. And, you know, he wasn't good in that first half, but he was decent in that second half. He was decent in that second half. And you look at the end result of his performance, I mean, he was not bad in terms of the final line, which was 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists. That's not bad. The 10 for 26, you would like some more efficiency in terms of that. But in terms of the other numbers, the rebounds, the assists, that's not bad. That's not bad. And he was 8 for 16 that second half and 18 points. So that wasn't bad. That was not bad. But I guess now with Russell Westbrook and with his style of play, and he's an aggressive player, and you want him to be and continue to be aggressive. He's an aggressive player, and that's when he's at his best. I think sometimes what happens, guys like Russell Westbrook and even guys like Allen Iverson in a lot of ways, and I'm not saying Westbrook is as a – I'm not saying he's a prolific scorer, as a prolific scorer as Allen Iverson. I'm not saying that, but – Russell Westbrook can score the basketball. If he's not Allen Iverson, I will say he's pretty close to it in terms of scoring the basketball. He can score the basketball. And the thing about that, and I think what happens with guys like him and Iverson, guys who are aggressive players, they're at their best first off when they're aggressive. But also I think what happens is I think that self-belief and that confidence, that supreme confidence that they can make any and all shots that they take, it sometimes, I think, gets the best of them. It sometimes, when you think you can make a shot, and obviously I'm going to speak about myself. Obviously, my game is not to level a Westbrook or an Allen Iverson. But I will say this about myself on the basketball court. I kind of fall into the same trap, and I'm not comparing myself to these guys because I'm not on that level. But sometimes you believe that you can make any shot. Any shot that you take, you believe you can make it. And that could be a gift because it's good to always believe that you can do something when you put your mind to it. It's always good to believe that and have confidence in what you do. But it also can be a curse because I think Westbrook believes he can make every shot that he makes and every shot that he takes. And sometimes those shots that he's taken are bad shots. But Westbrook, like Iverson, are good, bad shot makers. They make bad shots. When they take bad shots, they make those bad shots. And that sometimes you can fall into that trap when you're one of those guys. But the bottom line is this. Westbrook, when he shoots more than Durant, Oklahoma City is 25-6. When he shoots more than Durant, Oklahoma City is 25-6. So that tells me that this team is at their best when Russell Westbrook is aggressive. That stat tells me that they're at their best when Westbrook is aggressive. when Westbrook is aggressive, this team is at their best. 25-6 tells me that they're at their best. That's what that tells me. So guess what? Whether it's Durant's team, whether it's Westbrook's team, whoever. Durant's probably the best player on that team, but Westbrook is not too far behind. This team is at their best when Westbrook is aggressive. That's when they're at their best. Is there a more talented point guard in the game than Russell Westbrook? I know in terms of athleticism, I mean, late in that game, that follow jam that he had late in the game, and I tweeted right after that, Russell Westbrook is one of the more athletic point guards that we ever seen in life, you'll ever see. I mean, Russell Westbrook, his athleticism is second to none. And when Magic Johnson, one of the best point guards ever played this game, when he says that, you have to take some stock in that. I mean, if Magic Johnson is saying that, you have to take some stock in that. If Hutton is talking, you got to listen. So if Magic Johnson is saying that was the worst performance he's seen from a point guard in the NBA Finals in the first half, that was the worst performance he's seen. You have to say to yourself, wow, maybe it was. Maybe it was. But at the same time, he did come back in that second half and was 9-for-18 from the field in that second half and scored 18 points. So that was big. That was big for OKC. I just think right now, and looking at it, Russell Westbrook has to continue to be aggressive, has to continue to be himself. Because when he is at his best, and when he is himself, the Oklahoma City Thunder are at their best. And they are a team that was 25-6 when Russell Westbrook shoots the ball more than Durant. So that tells me again, that is their recipe for success. And every time, just because the recipe doesn't work, doesn't mean you scrap it. I mean, there's sometimes you put it together, and for whatever reason, it just does not come out the way you wanted it to. And I think the same could be said here in this particular situation. It's not going to work every time. But 25 out of 31 times, Westbrook shooting the ball more than Durant has been the recipe for success. And the reality is, in terms of that starting lineup, who else do you really want shooting the ball other than Westbrook and Durant? Do you want Ibaka? Do you want Kendrick Perkins? I mean, do you want Thabo Sefolosha? I mean, who do you want shooting the basketball other than these two great scorers in Westbrook? And I'm talking just purely starting lineup. Other than Westbrook and Durant. The only person is the Sixth Man of the Year award winner, James Harden. That's the only guy you want, other than the two guys that I mentioned, shooting the basketball for your ball club. Other than Westbrook and Durant, James Harden's the next guy you want shooting the basketball, but he's not in the starting lineup. And a lot of people have said maybe in order for the Thunder to not to get off those, in order for the Thunder to get off to a better start, maybe they need to insert Harden into the lineup. I don't think you do that if you're OKC. I think you stick to what has been successful for you in these playoffs, in the regular season. I think you have to stick to what's been successful. And what has been successful for Oklahoma City is the starting lineup, Perkins, Ibaka, Steph Alosha, Westbrook, and Durant. You have to stick with that. You have to stick with that. And I believe James Harden saw a stat the other day, has only started 7 games in his career. So he's comfortable. His comfort level is coming off the bench. That's his comfort level, coming off the bench. That's all he's pretty much done as a pro. I think you have to stick with that. And maybe it comes to a point where maybe Perkins, if they are getting off to a bad start, maybe you go a quick hook. Maybe you quickly take Perkins out and then insert Harden. Maybe earlier than the usual time. Maybe you insert Harden earlier than usual. Maybe that's what you do. Maybe that's what you do if the team is getting off to a bad start. But I think you have to stick with what got you here. You have to stick with what got you here. And we saw a team do that with the San Antonio Spurs. Similar situation in a lot of ways in terms of Danny Green is the starter, but clutch minutes go to Manu Ginobili. Greg Popovich made the decision in Game 5 to insert Ginobili into the starting lineup. Ginobili was successful, but ultimately it didn't work. It didn't work. And the Spurs, and we talked about this last week with NBA great Derek Anderson. I talked to Derek Anderson about this a few weeks before last week. He said, one thing about the Spurs is they don't change. They force you to adjust to what they do. They're not the ones who's going to do the adjusting. You're going to adjust to what they do. And it seemed like what happened was the Spurs started to adjust to what OKC was doing. They tried to adjust to what OKC was doing, and in some respect, took away the continuity that they had throughout the course of the year, where you had Danny Green in the starting lineup, and then you bring Ginobili off the bench. Maybe they could have maybe stuck Steven Jackson in there over Danny Green instead of Ginobili. Maybe that was the move. I don't know. But the bottom line is, if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder, don't change, don't change, don't change what you've been doing throughout the course of the year. Don't change what has been successful for you throughout the course of this year. Don't change that. I think it would be a mistake to do so. I really think it would be a mistake. To do that. Stick with what got you here. Do what you've done to get you to this point. So I think if you're OKC, you don't make changes here. This is not the time to change. This is not the time to change. It's not time to change here. It's time. It was time. It's time to just stick with what got you here. Stick with that recipe. If it calls for 3 cups of sugar, don't add 4 cups. If it calls for a stick of butter, don't add 2. Or don't substitute that butter for margarine. do what you did to get to this point. Don't change. The second hour of Go For It starts now. And we're in the second hour of Go For It. In this next hour, we're expected to be joined by Carolina Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis. We're going to talk to him as he prepares for the upcoming NFL season and for training camps that are around the corner. Training camp, mini camp, and all those great camps that are around the corner. And also, we're going to be joined by Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. He's going to come on, and we're going to talk about the aftermath of a controversial decision that we saw last week in Las Vegas. Timothy Bradley, Manny Pacquiao. We're going to talk to Cliff Rhodes about that particular fight, the aftermath of that fight, and get his thoughts on what happens in the future with Pacquiao and even with Bradley. The way I look at it is this. I don't think the public really wants to see that fight again. I don't get the sense that the public is clamoring to see Timothy Bradley and Manny Pacquiao again. I mean, on many scorecards in the media, the scorecards, many people had the fight as pretty much one night. You saw a lot of 119s, 109, maybe a 118, 110. You didn't see a lot of close scores in that particular fight. So I don't think anybody wants to see that again. I think I'm one who does not want to see that again. I don't want to see that again. I'm good with what I saw on last Saturday night. I don't want to see that again. No, thank you. The fight wasn't close. I don't want to see it. It's not something that is alluring to me. I don't want to see it. And I don't think the public really wants to see it. So it should be interesting to see whether or not there will actually be a rematch. We shall see. You're listening to Go For It on blogtalkradio.com. And we're back. And let's bring in a caller now. You're on Go For It.
Hey, yeah, you watched the Reds game last night?
I did not. What happened?
Reds won. I heard
Reds
they're at the top of their division right now.
How do you feel about the Reds? I mean, right now they're on top of the division.
I feel like they could go on and win it all. Honestly, I think they could. It's possible.
Okay.
I mean, if they keep it up. You know, Joey Votto scoring most of their home runs this year, though.
But you look at it, I mean, St. Louis is a team that's four games behind them. Not playing bad, but and you got the Pirates there in the second place. Can the Reds hold on?
Well, with Pirates, if they're going against the Pirates like that, competing with them, I mean, they could. I don't know if they will go through with it competing against the Pirates like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's good to have the Pirates there as the number two team because you don't expect them to be in position to ultimately win that division.
No, because I don't honestly think the Pirates are the best team in the world either. I mean, I think they're,
obviously not.
I mean, I'm more of a Reds fan, you know.
And you're getting some good production out of Jay Bruce.
Oh, yeah, man. Same with, one of my favorite players on that team is, Joey Votto. I like Bruce. I like him. I like Brandon Phillips.
Very solid second baseman. Very solid second baseman.
His average this year isn't as best as last year, but, I think it's like around 250 or 60 or something like that. But, I think he's gotten around maybe the last time I heard. I have no idea how many runs he's gotten this year, but, I honestly think that if the Reds keep it up, they could win it all this year. Maybe. Yeah, I think they could. I'm a big Reds fan. Never really liked the Pirates. Like the Diamondbacks. I'm pretty sure they lost last night, or I could be wrong.
And let me check that. I believe that they did lose as well. But you talk about the Reds. You talk about Brandon Phillips. I mean, right now, 40 RBI, 9 home runs. Batting close to 300 at 290, so he's getting it done for the Reds as well.
290, all right.
This is a team right now that is in position to win the division and ultimately get to the playoffs. We'll see what happens with the Reds. Hey, well, thank you for the call.
Hey, no problem.
Good boy. And we have a Reds fan, a big-time Cincinnati Reds fan. You don't hear a lot of them calling, but I guess you're going to hear a lot of them right now coming out of the woodworks because the Reds right now are on top of their division, up 4 games over the Pirates and the St. Louis Cardinals. So we're going to hear a lot of Reds talk, but it's still early. Still a lot of baseball to be played. We're not even at the All-Star break. We're not even out of June. So we got a lot of baseball to be played here before we can start talking Reds, and so on and so forth. But A lot of baseball to be played moving forward, but give the Reds credit right now. They're on top of the division and playing some decent baseball. But I think the Cardinals are going to be a team that the Reds are going to have to look out for. The Cardinals are going to be the team that the Reds are really going to have to look out for. But again, early, still a lot of baseball to be played. Don't panic if you're a fan of a team that's not doing as well. Don't panic just yet unless you're a really, really bad team. I mean, unless you're a fan of a really, really, really bad team, then it's time to panic and maybe even time to just forget about baseball for the rest of the season. I mean, maybe it's time. Maybe it's getting to that point. Maybe we're getting to that point where it's time to just forget about baseball. Maybe it's time for you to stop watching baseball this year. I mean, if you're a fan of the Seattle Mariners, you might as well forget it. You might as well forget it. If you're a fan of the Minnesota Twins, you might want to stop watching baseball. Obviously, if you're a fan of the Chicago Cubs or the San Diego Padres, baseball is not something you should be watching right now. And if you're watching it, you're probably not enjoying yourself because those teams are bad. And if you're a Cubs fan, you're used to this. This is the norm for you. This happens all the time. This is nothing different, nothing new under the sun. If you're a fan of the Chicago Cubs, I mean, so you should expect this, is what I'm telling you. Expect this. You should expect it. And get used to it. And embrace it on some level, I guess. I guess you will be happier if you just embrace that, you know what? My team will always be bad. They will never win. And I'm going to have to embrace that. I'm going to have to live with that, deal with that. It is what it is. That's my life. That's my life. If in terms of being a fan of the Chicago Cubs. That's what comes with it. That's what comes with being a Cubs fan. Just sadness and unhappiness and just flat out losing. That's what you deal with when you're a fan of the Chicago Cubs. Just a bad baseball team, already 20 games under 500, 66 games in, 64 games in, and 20 games, I should say, under 500. That's got to be a tough situation if you're a Chicago Cubs fan. That's not a good life. Being a Chicago Cubs fan. Awful life. Awful life. Awful life. if you're a Chicago Cubs fan. Bad, bad baseball for many, many, many years. And when they were good, something bad seemed to always happen. Something bad seemed to always happen. Steve Bartman. Is the bad that happened? Is that something bad that would happen? I mean, the whole Steve Bartman thing is the bad that happens. I mean, just so many things tend to happen when you're a Cubs fan. It was like that for the Red Sox for many years until they broke through. It was like that for the Red Sox for many years. Until they finally broke through. Once they broke through, then they were, well, I mean, then it's good times in Boston. Good times in Boston. Very good times. If you're a Red Sox fan. It's good to be a Red Sox fan. Because you finally broke through. You broke through the curse. You broke that curse. Took a long time for you to do it, but you did it. You did it. You finally did it. But you look at it now, and looking at baseball, and switching gears to baseball, you look at it now, you have the Phillies in last place. You have the Red Sox in last place, and these are teams. These have been the traditional powerhouses the past few years. Right now, both of those teams are in the cellar. They're in the cellar. Red Sox 2 games under .500, 7.5 out, and then the Phillies 4 games under .500, 9 out. And the Phillies, the reason for the Phillies' struggles have been injuries. Injuries have been a big part of the situation. Two best hitters, Chase Utley and Ryan Howard, are on the DL. Their best pitcher, Roy Halladay, on the DL. Their best pitcher this year has been Cole Hamels. But coming into the season, you would say probably the best pitcher on the staff would be Roy Halladay. So, you look at it now, if you're a fan of those two teams, the Phillies and the Red Sox, you're wondering if those two teams can break out of it. You wonder if those two teams can get out of the cellar. You wonder. I think they can. I think especially the Phillies. I think if they can get Howard back, and he's somewhat of the Ryan Howard of old, and you can get Utley back, and you can get and he's somewhat of Chase Utley of old, and maybe you can make a run, especially with that pitching staff. With the staff that you have in Philly with Hamels and Holiday and Vance Worley, who's pitching well, and Cliff Lee, you have a shot. You have a shot. You truly and definitely have a shot. But you're looking at it, can the Phillies get out of the cellar? Can the Red Sox get out of the cellar? I think they do. I'm not saying the Red Sox or the Phillies get into the playoffs, but they definitely get out of the cellar. They definitely get out of the cellar. But we'll see. We'll see as interleague play continues in Major League Baseball. Boring in terms of interleague play. I mean, been there, done that. I'm over it. I'm over it now. The novelty, the thrill is gone. The thrill is gone, as B.B. King would say, of interleague play. But it continues this week, and we'll see what happens. Red Sox and Phillies, who gets out of the basement? Who gets out of the basement? We shall see. Will either of those teams get out of the basement? Two traditional powerhouses in the last few years are in the basement. And speaking of a powerhouse, a guy who's won many championships, a guy who arguably is one of the greatest coaches to ever coach in the NBA, Phil Jackson, had some interesting comments. His interview with Real Sports, which airs this Tuesday, has some interesting comments about the New York Knicks and the team as a whole. Phil talked about the Knicks and came out and said, and Jackson is a former Knicks and Nick and won a championship with the Knicks, but he came out and said that's not a team that he would want to coach. He called the Knicks clumsy. He believes that Stoudemire and Anthony, Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire do not fit well together. He believes those two don't fit well together. He believes that Melo needs to be a better passer. And with Melo, I mean, when the ball comes his way, his game is off the dribble. That's his game, off the dribble. And Jackson believes that Melo needs to become a better passer. And you wonder, in terms of Stoudemire and in terms of Anthony, whether or not these two really can play with each other. The Knicks were at their best when either Stoudemire or Melo was out, but not both together. When Jeremy Lin and Lin Sanity came along, Stoudemire was there, Melo was out. And that was the Knicks at their best in a lot of ways. If there's no Lin Sanity, the Knicks don't even make it to the playoffs. If there is no Lin Sanity, the Knicks do not make it to the playoffs. You wonder if Phil Jackson will ever make a comeback, and you get the sense that he's not done. Just a sense from afar that Phil Jackson is not done. That he wants and believes he wants another shot at this. He's not done, I don't think. I don't think he's done. But you know Phil is going to try to get into a good situation. 66 years old, he's going to try to get into a good situation. Phil's not going to go to a rebuilding situation. When he came back the first time after Chicago, guess where he went? He went where there were two superstars in Kobe and Shaq. And granted, Kobe and Shaq didn't win anything until Phil came. But Phil Jackson went where he knew there would be success. And there was success with Kobe and with Shaquille O'Neal. There was success there. There was success with Shaq and Kobe. So you know Phil is not going to go anywhere unless there are some superstars or at least a star or two in the mix. And to me, that job that would be perfect for Phil Jackson and is Miami. And if Miami, if the Heat are not successful this time around in the NBA Finals, at that point, if you're Phil Jackson, if you're Pat Riley, more so than Phil Jackson, if you're Pat Riley, do you make the decision and try to go with a Phil Jackson? Will it take a Phil Jackson to get you over that hump? I mean, Pat Riley loves Eric Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra is respected around the league as being a good young coach. Is he not ready for this stage? And when it comes to the Miami Heat, the stage I'm talking about is that championship level, that championship stage. That's what the Miami Heat are about, winning championships at this point. If you don't win, it doesn't make sense if you're the Miami Heat. So you have to bring in a coach if Eric Spoelstra does not get it done, do you try to go after Phil Jackson? Is that where the Miami Heat go? We shall see. You're listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio.
Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pizzerica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
And we're going to bring in a guy who's tough, a guy that nothing can stop him, a guy who's about comebacks and is going to make another comeback this year. Let's bring in now Carolina Panthers linebacker, the one, the only, Thomas Davis. Thomas, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I appreciate you talking about the Miami Heat. Before I came on, I'm an avid Miami Heat fan. Just want to throw that out there.
and let me ask. I mean, I asked it. If the Heat don't get it done this year, should they look at a Phil Jackson type to possibly get them over the top?
We're going to get it done this year, so ain't no even thinking about Coach Spoelstra out of
there. I agree with you. I think you guys do get it done. It's going to be tough. It truly is going to be tough. And I talked about it earlier with all the things that everybody talking about, LeBron James, LeBron this, LeBron that, him not being clutch, so on and so forth. I mean, let's look at game 6 against the Celtics, 45-15-5. Let's look at game 4 against the Pacers, 40-18. I mean, I know he's got to win a championship to shut the critics up, but I think we're just too unfair on LeBron James. It's just too unfair, the criticism.
I think it's safe to go ahead and add game 2 against Oklahoma City to that list, too.
Correct, correct.
12-12 from the free throw line, the bank shot that he made to put us up by 4 points again. So definitely, man, a lot of people are going to hate on LeBron, and you're only going to get haters if you're great, and that's what he is.
Right, right, and that's the bottom line. So just so I'm clear, you believe the Heat get it done. How many games?
Without a doubt, I think we're going to get it done in 6.
6, okay. And I had the Heat winning in 6 as well. I had them winning in 6 as well. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be interesting, and I said this earlier in the show, I wouldn't mind seeing this thing go 7 because this has been some great basketball. This has been some very good basketball. You can't ask for better basketball than what we saw the first 2 games.
It definitely has been, and I don't want it to go to 7. I want the Heat to win in 6, so I know we have that assurance of having that victory.
And if I was a Heat fan, I would agree with you. I would definitely would agree with you. And let's get down to you now, Thomas. Right now, you're working your way back from a third ACL injury. I heard you say you expect to play 19 games in 2012. Talk about your recovery and where it stands at this point.
Now, my recovery is going extremely well. Our trainers are happy. I went back and visited Dr. Andrews, and he's extremely excited about where I am. And I think people are just really looking forward to seeing this happen. They want me to do well, and I'm definitely appreciative of them being behind me.
And looking at it right now, Thomas, no player has come back from 3 ACL injuries in the same knee. How much does that motivate you to get back on the field?
Man, it's one of the biggest motivating factors for me. Because not only am I trying to do it for myself, but I'm trying to do it for guys that are coming up behind me, or guys that have come before me that has gone through 3 ACLs and that will go through 3 ACLs. And I think you know. So guys still can't play after doing it 3 times.
Right, exactly. I mean, 3 ACL injuries, it hasn't been done. And you're going to be the first to do it. And looking at it, when you injured your ACL this time around, you had some experience with having your ACL being torn. Did you know when you heard it that it was an ACL?
Not the third time. No, the second time it hit, but the third time it was like, in those situations where you just hope that you can bang some up, or, you know, you just did something a lot smaller than actually tearing your ACL, but I thought it was protecting me, and you know, I just got hit wrong. It was one of those situations where Dr. Andrews explained to me after watching the film and watching the play, he said it was just a violent blow, caught you in a bad place, in a bad position. He said it didn't matter who it was at that position, ACL would have been torn on that play.
Okay. And looking at it now, I mean, when that happened, did retirement come across your mind?
Hello?
Yes.
Could you repeat that?
Okay. When it happened, when you injured your ACL for the third time, did you say to yourself, man, I can't go through this again? I can't go through the rehab. I'm going to call it quits?
Initially, no, that's the first thing that came to my mind. Like, okay, this is it. This is over. And a big part of that was not really being sure that the team would even be willing to, you know, give me another opportunity to make a run at it. So,
right.
With all of that going through my mind, knowing how tough the rehab is, you know, I did for a brief minute think about, okay, this is it. But after, you know, I went home, talked to my wife about it, we prayed about it, and, you know, we talked to the team, and they said that they would be willing to give me another shot, and that was the end of that, you know?
Right, and looking at it, I mean, you talked about in the beginning when it first happened, you know what, you thought about possibly giving it up. Throughout the course of this rehab, were there times where you said to yourself where maybe I can't do it? Were there any those yeah. dark moments, those dark times?
Never crossed my mind once.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to do it while I've been going through this rehab. I actually been everything positive. Where I am at what I was before, and my knee was doing extremely well compared to all of the other times. And you know, I had another workout buddy and John Deason, who was motivating and pushing each other the whole way through. So it flew by.
Okay. We're talking to Carolina Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis. And Thomas, looking at it now, you tore your ACL three times. We know that. But looking at it, how do you avoid being tentative out there?
Well, I think it's one of those things, man. You know what has happened in the past, and you just got to not think about it. You know, you got to go out, and in order to play to your full potential, you have to go out and you have to react to certain things. You can't be sitting there thinking about your knee because you're going to be ineffective and not helpful to the team actually sitting
right.
around thinking about your knee.
Definitely. And looking at it, I mean, your Carolina Panthers right now, they're in good hands with quarterback Cam Newton, who had a great rookie year for you guys. Did you expect him to have that type of impact as a rookie?
If anybody in this world can tell you that they expected him to have that kind of impact, they will be telling you a lie. I definitely know that a lot of people were actually hating on Cam as well. And, you know, he came in and he proved all his critics wrong. He proved the doubters wrong. He went out and had arguably the best season of a rookie quarterback in NFL history.
Right. Definitely. He definitely balled last year for you guys. And looking at you guys now, I mean, I heard you talking about that. Not only do you think this team can make the playoffs, but you think this team can make a run at the Super Bowl. Talk about that.
And if you look at the games that we lost last year, I think out of 8 or 9 of the 10 losses that we had, we actually had the lead in the fourth quarter. Think about that.
Right.
With the defensive guys that we had missing from this team last year due to injury, and with the offense that we have that's capable of putting up points at any given second, to get everybody back healthy on defense and for us to come together with a full offseason under our belt, learning the new defensive scheme that we put in last year, and our offense having that much more time to gel, I think the sky's the limit for this team, without a doubt.
And there's definitely a lot of talent on this ball club. Were there times when we were watching games and watching the defense where you're saying, wow, if I was out there or Beeson was out there, we could have made that play?
Hey, what the crazy part about that, we didn't even have to say it because we had other people coming up to us saying it, you know, and it made it that much harder because we knew with us being out there, we can make a positive impact on the game and on the team, and there was nothing we can do about it due to the injuries.
Right, and the injury bug really hit you guys hard last season. And right now, Thomas, you're fighting to get on the field, but you're doing a lot of great things off the field with your foundation, Thomas Davis Defending Dreams Foundation. Tell us a little bit about this great foundation.
Well, my foundation is geared towards giving back to underprivileged kids. We try to do a lot of work in the community with these different organizations and different kids, and we try to reach out to them and just do whatever we can as an organization to give back to them and make sure that they feel the love that we have for them.
Right. And any big events for you guys coming up?
We are currently not in planning for any events, but the next thing that we do will be our back-to-school drive.
Okay, okay. And what do you guys do there?
We usually just give away about 300 book bags full of school supplies for the kids.
Okay, okay. And that's a great thing. Where can we find information about this great foundation?
Check us out at defendingdreams.org.
Defendingdreams.org. Make sure you check it out and support this great foundation and support this great man as he's fighting to make a comeback on the field, and he's also doing some great, great things off the field. And Thomas, looking at it now, are you going to participate in mini camps and training camps, or how's that going to work out for you? How's that going to go?
Our mini camp and OTAs are over, but I will be participating 100% in training camp, without a doubt.
And so you're going to be participating in all the drills and everything during training camp?
I'm going to participate 100% in training camp.
Okay. And in terms of the preseason, is there some? Have you outlined that at this point in terms of how many games you're going to play there?
I think that's something that's going to be up to the coaches where they decide and when they decide to play us. But I definitely know that in training camp, we're full go.
Okay, okay. And you're very confident in your abilities to make the comeback, and I believe you can do it, and you sound very confident in that belief. And we shall see. But, Thomas, best of luck to you, man. Best of luck to you. And I know you have a Twitter. Where can fans connect with you on Twitter?
At TD58SDTM.
Fans, make sure you connect with this man on Twitter, TD58SDTM. Connect with this man. He's got a lot of great things going on the field and off the field. And, Thomas, just so I'm clear, you have the Miami Heat winning this thing in six.
Without a doubt. Go Heat.
And if you have the time, are you going to go to the parade?
Absolutely not. I'm going to try to make it to a game, though.
Okay, okay. We got three games there. So what game are you shooting to get to?
It'll probably be the third one.
Okay, okay. And we shall see. Thomas, man, it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward, and let's do this again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thomas Davis, linebacker, Carolina Panthers. He's going to be the first, everybody, to make a comeback from three ACL injuries on the same knee. He's a tough man, a man that does not take no for an answer, and he's going to do what he has to do to get back on the field, and I wish him nothing but the best of luck moving forward. I wish, really do. You love to see comeback stories. You love to see guys fight through adversity and make things happen, and I expect Thomas Davis to do that. And I want to, looking back now, and we talked about Game 2 of the NBA Finals, and one of the differences in that Game 2 was transition. And you look at the Miami Heat, they're best when they're in transition, when they're in the fast break. And they outscored the Oklahoma State. Well, they scored 9 points in Game 1 in transition, meaning the Miami Heat. And in Game 2, they came back with 21 points in transition. That's a 12-point difference. That's a 12-point difference. And so the Miami Heat are at their best when they are in transition. They're at their best when they are in transition. They're at their best when they're running. And when you get those boys out there in transition, LeBron and D-Wade, when you get those boys out there in transition, they're a tough, tough team to stop. And you have that freight train in LeBron James, a freight train in LeBron James coming at you, and D-Wade and those guys, the things that they do with the alley-oops and everything. I mean, this is a team meaning the Miami Heat, that when they're on transition, they're a tough, tough team to beat. The key is for the Miami Heat, you got to get them in the half-court game. They're a different team in the half-court. And then think about it, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, those guys don't really play off each other like that. I mean, both of those guys are effective when those guys have the ball in their hands. LeBron James is at his best when he has the ball in his hand. Dwayne Wade is at his best when he has the ball in his hands. So, looking at these two guys, meaning LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, these guys need to be out and running. They need to be out and running, and they were out and running in game two, 21 big points in transition, and you wonder if they can keep that up in Miami for games 3, 4, and 5. You wonder if they can keep that up in games 3, 4, and 5. And that should be the interesting thing with the Miami Heat and with Dwayne Wade and with LeBron James and Chris Bosh and the rest of those boys. Do they keep up with the transition and do the thing in transition in games 3, 4, and 5? And if it's a half-court game, I think you have to say advantage Oklahoma City Thunder. But if it's an up-tempo game, I think you have to say advantage. And if Miami's getting out in transition, running, and doing their things in transition, you have to favor the Miami Heat. But again, we shall see. And great, great basketball, like I said. I mean, if you're a basketball fan, you're in heaven. You're just in heaven right now watching all these great games. You're just in heaven. And I want to look to switch gears now. Interesting comments. David Stern and Jim Rome had an interesting back and forth. Jim Rome had questioned David Stern in terms of the NBA draft lottery and talked about whether or not it was fixed. And looking at it, and I talked about this last week, I don't think the lottery was fixed at all. And I think if you're David Stern, you had a buyer pretty much with Tom Benson. I think if you're David Stern, what you do is, I think the best thing that could have happened is possibly the Charlotte Bobcats getting the number one pick, getting this guy in Anthony Davis, a guy who many believe will be a star in this league. And, you know, you talk about the Charlotte Bobcats, a team that was historically bad. They were a historically bad team. They were an historically bad team. And so, you will want a team owned by Michael Jordan, arguably the greatest player in this league to ever play the game. But not only you can argue in terms of whether he's the greatest player to ever play the game, but you can't argue in terms of the impact that he has had off the court with the sneakers and so on and so forth. So, if you're David Stern, you would want Anthony Davis, and you would want the Charlotte Bobcats to be a successful and a very good ball club. You would want a team owned by Michael Jordan to be successful, to be good. You would want that. You don't want a team owned by Michael Jordan to be bad. It's good to have a team owned by Michael Jordan to be good. You would want that. And so, David Stern pretty much found the question that Jim Rome asked him, and the question that Rome asked him was this: I know that you appreciate a good conspiracy theory as much as the next guy. Was the fix in for the lottery? And, I mean, it was a question that had to be asked, but I think it's a question that probably could have been asked in a different way. And when you ask the question in that way, it makes it seem like, you know what, you're basically saying, it's just the way he asked the question. It could have been asked in a different way. It could have been asked in a different way. It could have been asked in a better way. But, I mean, in asking was the fix in for the lottery, I don't think it was a good way to ask the question. I guess I would have asked in terms of, okay, many people have questioned whether or not the lottery is fixed. And we go back to the Knicks situation in 85 with Patrick Ewing and the Knicks getting to Patrick Ewing and getting the number one pick, so on and so forth. I mean, how do you respond to something like that? And that's the way I would have asked it in terms of that. How I would have asked it, how would you respond to the perception out there that many believe that the NBA draft lottery is fixed. And then Stern responded with some interesting comments. Have you stopped beating your wife yet? And granted, Jim Rome has no history of any type of spousal abuse of any kind whatsoever. But I guess the commissioner was asking the question, basically saying it's a ridiculous question. And just how he felt the question that Jim Rome asked was ridiculous. By him saying, does Jim Rome beat his wife, or has Jim Rome stopped beating his wife, he's basically saying how ridiculous that question was that Jim Rome asked. I don't think it was a ridiculous question. I just think it could have been done or asked in a better way. It wasn't a ridiculous question because many people have been talking about that. Many people believe that the NBA draft lottery is fixed. Many people believe that the fix was in this time around. I don't believe it was at all, because I think if you want to fix it, you would fix it so that MJ would have Anthony Davis with him in Charlotte, and so that MJ and the Charlotte Bobcats can build a winner down there. And a lot of people forget it, but Charlotte Bobcats, you look at that organization, that was a organization, that was a fan base. When you had the Hornets there in Charlotte, who was great. That was a great fan base in Charlotte. A great fan base in Charlotte. And then after the situation with George Shinn and some of his nonsense, the fan base kind of turned on the Hornets. But that was a great fan base in Charlotte. A great fan base in Charlotte. And they supported the Hornets before George Shinn and his nonsense. But again, so... And I'm not sure if New Orleans could ever be a team that's going to support the NBA. I question that. And I know a lot of fans in Seattle are trying to get the Sonics back, and the Sonics really are the Oklahoma City Thunder. But a lot of fans in Seattle are trying to get a team back in Seattle. And quite frankly, I think a team needs to be in Seattle and not in New Orleans. I don't think a team belongs in New Orleans in terms of NBA basketball. I don't think the fan base will support it the way the fan base was supported in Seattle. That was a great, great NBA city. Oklahoma City is a good NBA city as well, as we're seeing right now. The fan base there is supporting their team, and it's a great, great atmosphere each and every time you go to that particular arena. Haven't been there, but what you see on TV, it's a great atmosphere. Let's bring in a guy now, and we're going to switch gears to the fight that happened last Saturday. Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley, a guy who's watched the fight, a guy who knows a lot about the fight game. BoxingScene.com writer, the one, the only, Cliff Rold. Cliff, how are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. How are you doing this weekend?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Hey, it sounds like you're ready for game three tomorrow night.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. This has been some great,
yeah,
great basketball.
I got to tell you, I don't watch it. I used to watch a ton of basketball, but as you get older, it's hard to keep up with every sport. But
right.
watching KD and LeBron these last couple games, that'll get your passion rekindled for that sport.
Definitely. We'll see what happens. Game 3, 4, and 5. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And I can't wait. Cliff, last Saturday, obviously a bad decision. Timothy Bradley awarded a split decision victory over Manny Pacquiao. Your initial thoughts when you heard the scorecards?
You know, I giggled. I've watched boxing for so long, and I've seen so many terrible decisions. And by the way, for those out there calling this the worst decision they've ever seen, watch more boxing. I mean, this has nothing on stuff like, you know, Pernell Whitaker, Julio Cesar Chavez, or even Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis. But because of who got robbed, the magnitude, his importance in the sport relative to this era, this
right.
is pretty bad. But I just sort of laughed. I mean, when I heard the first score and they announced it with Pacquiao's name, I thought, somebody, you know in boxing, they either say, you know, we've got a unanimous decision, or they start naming scores. And as soon as they did that, I thought, they're going to rob him. I don't know why it came over me. I was like, no way. You know, he's kind of incredulous. And then, you know, they gave the fight to Bradley, and I just sort of laughed. I was like, you know, that's boxing. And you know, I wrote about it. I thought it was a bad decision. But, you know, I mean, this weekend we've got two good fights, so I'm kind of over it, and, you know, we'll see
right.
where would they go from there.
And what was your scorecard?
I had a 116-112 for Manny Pacquiao. That's 8 rounds to 4. That's a little closer than some had it. I think some of the scorecards I've seen, you know, 11 rounds to 1, I think that's too wide. I think anything for Bradley is too wide. I don't think he won the fight. But, you know, I think anything between Max Kellerman was talking about this on his radio show the other day. Anything in the range between 7-5 Pacquiao, 11-1 Pacquiao, that's the range of acceptable scores for this fight. And I think 8-4 is probably about the best score you can come up with. Because I came up with it, so I'm happy with it.
And Cliff, according to Judge Dwayne Ford, a well-respected judge in Las Vegas, he said Bradley gave Pacquiao a boxing lesson. What could he have saw that night to say that? I mean, what?
Nothing. I think that was a reaction. I think when you're in the position that Dwayne Ford's in, you're kind of under siege. It's uncommon for judges to come out and talk about their scores publicly. Especially on televised air, Dwayne Ford will be on the HBO replay tonight to talk about it. I think when you feel under siege, you might make a comment that's a little ridiculous. You know, if Timothy Bradley gave Manny Pacquiao a boxing lesson, he would have won 9 or 10 rounds. You don't give a boxing lesson at 7 rounds to 5. That's absurd. But, you know, I don't think Dwayne Ford is necessarily a bad judge. Historically, he's actually been a pretty good judge. He had a bad night.
That he did. Talk about Pacquiao's performance Saturday night.
I thought, relative to the opponent, I mean, you look at who Manny Pacquiao has fought for the last couple of years. The best opponent he had had going into the fight prior to Timothy Bradley was probably Joshua Claudio. Joshua Claudio was a legitimate top five welterweight. Juan Manuel Marquez was, of course, the very best opponent, but I don't think everyone knew that before the fight. I think a lot of people were looking at Marquez as an aged fighter. We made the same mistake before the second Pacquiao-Marquez fight. You know, some rivalries are just that good. But, you know, I think Timothy Bradley, I've seen enough of him against good quality fighters. I mean, he beat Devin Alexander. He beat Kendall Holt. He's got some quality wins. I think going into the fight, he was the most dangerous opponent to Pacquiao since Miguel Cotto. And I think it was, relative to the opponent, Pacquiao's best performance since Miguel Cotto. But it was a different kind of performance. Instead of overpowering his man, instead of running through him, he found a guy who wasn't going to drop. Timothy Bradley's got a great chin, so he backed off and boxed him. It was the best boxing performance he's had since the second Marco Antonio Barrera fight, where, again, he found an opponent who wasn't going to drop that night, and so he backed off, picked his shots, and I thought he did a great job sharpshooting against Bradley. He used the right hand a lot better than he's gotten credit for in the last week. His right hand was really the best punch in the fight. And the left was, you know, that's his money shot, but he was setting it up much better with his right hand than we've seen recently.
We're talking to Cliff Roll, BoxingScene.com. And, Cliff, I know there's a rematch clause in the contract, but correct me if I'm wrong here. I don't believe the public really wants to see this fight again. Your thoughts?
I think the public still wants to see Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. I think most people out there still think those are the two best fighters in the sport. I still think you could have either one of them as the top dog in the game right now. There are some young guys coming up behind them real quick, and they're both getting old. I mean, Mayweather's 35, Pacquiao 33. You know, eventually they're going to get old. We're seeing at welterweight that Manny Pacquiao is not the sort of devastating puncher consistently that he was at lower weights. He has not scored a knockout since 2009. And a lot of that has to do with the weight class he's in. He was a killer at 126, 130, you know, even up to 140. At 147, his power is leveling out. You know, eventually one of these younger, naturally bigger guys is going to knock him off. They need to make the big fight. They probably
right.
won't. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a fourth Marquez fight, although I could live my whole life and never see that. You know, considering how few times fighters fight today, I don't need to see that again. I'd like to see...
Right.
You know, Pacquiao and Mayweather fight fresh faces, if not each other. I think you could see the rematch. I don't see why not. I know people say they wouldn't buy it, but by November, you know, a lot of people who love Manny Pacquiao would like to see that revenge. Other people would be drawn in by the controversy. You can still do big business on a rematch.
Definitely. You got a lot of tough talkers out here saying, oh, I'm not going to buy pay-per-view again. But after watching a few episodes of 24/7, you will be back. You will
be back. Somehow, a lot of people were never going to buy a fight again after 800,000 or so bought Chavez Whitaker.
Right.
No one was ever going to buy a fight again after 1.1, I think it was, million bought Lewis and Holyfield. And yet here we are in, you know, 2012, and Mayweather-Pat Cotto is doing bigger numbers in both of those fights. Granted, the market's a little different now, but, you know, people who love big fights will always come back for big fights. It's the rest of the sport that suffers because they don't give non-stars a chance because of the overall feeling about the sport.
And looking at it now, if Bradley doesn't get the rematch with Pacquiao, where does he go from here?
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the sad part for Tim Bradley. I mean, if a guy was going to get a bad decision, he's the kind of guy you wouldn't mind seeing get it. He seems like a really good guy, decent father, you know, just an all-around decent guy. He doesn't deserve sort of the backlash he's getting. He didn't score the fight. It's not his fault. He gave an earnest, honest effort. He showed a lot of balls. He showed a lot of beard.
Right.
Where does he go? I'll tell you what. It wouldn't surprise me if Pacquiao goes in another direction from a Bradley rematch. If that Bradley is the sort of opponent where Floyd Mayweather and Bob Arum could actually do business and make a fight. Because the thing about Bradley is he's not necessarily big money, and there's no guarantee on a Pacquiao-Marquez 4 that Pacquiao's available. Now, if Bob wants to sit on Tim Bradley, hold him off for the winner of a Pacquiao-Marquez 4, he could do that. But he could also make a lot of money and do, you know, you get some of that comparison shopping, you know, because Floyd Mayweather's kind of short on options right now, too. I think
right.
If you read the tea leaves, he's probably being set up for Robert Guerrero later this year, but we'll see how that goes.
Right. And would you want to see that fight? Guerrero,
Mayweather-Bradley?
No,
I don't see why not. It's a good fight. I mean, there's not a lot of great fights out there for either of them. I mean, if I was going to say the best Mayweather fight, I'd love to see him go up and fight Sergio Martinez, but I don't see that happening.
Okay. And we talked about a lot of people are coming out saying, you know, boxing needs to do something. Is there anything that could be done to avoid these type of bad decisions, or is it just the nature of the game?
Just get used to it. I mean, I used to like to think that there was something you could do. I mean, you hear a lot about national commissions. But where are these, you know, that boxing is the only sport without a national commission? That's nonsense. There's no governmental sanctioning body for most other sports. Most sports rely on their state commissions. You have large corporate entities like Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL. You're never going to get boxing lined up like that. It's not a team sport. You know, maybe you could do it like tennis where you have a point system, you know, and you have some, you know, but I think people fail to recognize just how diverse boxing is. I mean, why would the people who market boxing in Japan, where the stars are overwhelmingly between the weights of 126 and 105 pounds, give a crap about what super middleweights and middleweights are doing in the United States or want to operate under the same rules? They're diverse markets. You know, and I boxing is very different in different parts of the world. And so I think you just have to take the good with the bad. I think what we need to do, though, is put public pressure to have less bad. It feels worse these days because big fights are more infrequent than they used to be.
Right.
And the number of bad decisions this year has been off the charts. And something has to be done. I think New Jersey had the right idea last year. If you have a truly egregious decision like Paul Williams and Arislandi Lara, start suspending judges. You take food off people's table, they'll come back and try to do a better job.
We're talking to BoxingScene.com, writer Cliff Rolden. Cliff, you talked about some of the big fights this weekend. Chavez Jr., Andy Lee. Who do you have there tonight?
I think Chavez will win. Something about Andy Lee I don't trust. He kind of has bird legs. I'm not sure how good his chin is. Some people question his stamina. He's got a better amateur pedigree. He's probably the better natural puncher, but I think both guys have a pretty good beard. I think Chavez has a pretty good beard, better than Lee's. And I think over the course of a fight, if Lee doesn't get him out of there early, that Chavez will start to wear him down, grind on him, get him on the ropes. And if he doesn't, if Lee... You know, and Lee doesn't stop him, and Lee gets up on the scorecards. Again, this is a judging fight. Does anyone really think that Julio Cesar Chavez, unless he gets dropped 3 or 4 times, is going to lose a decision in Texas?
Exactly.
I mean, we were talking about Chavez Whitaker earlier. Remember the Alamo Dome? I just don't see it. And the other big fight tonight, of course, Tomas Adamek, Eddie Chambers up in New Jersey. That's a good heavyweight fight for people who have NBC Sports Cable. You know, they might not be as good as the Klitschko's, But this is as good of a non-Klitschko heavyweight fight as you can get in the heavyweight division right now. It's a very good matchup.
And then you have the other kid, Jennings, who's impressing some people, the heavyweight from Philadelphia.
Yeah, I like Jennings. He's not a big puncher, and, you know, that's always going to be, you know, some people aren't going to love that at heavyweight. He doesn't have that sort of physicality that Seth Mitchell does. But there's some about him. He's fun to watch. He's a fighter. He gets in there. He's got quick hands. He doesn't shirk from the task. He's not a fancy Dan. He doesn't move around. You know, he might make some noise. He's a tough kid. And, you know, the heavyweight division is changing. You know, you're seeing the new wave come along. There aren't any giants. I mean, there's still a lot of big guys. But you don't have giants with the athletic talent of the Klitschkos, at least not right this second. So you don't have, you know, guys who have Vladimir's finishing power. So I think you're going to see a new breed of heavyweights coming in the next few years, and Jennings could fit in there.
And looking at last weekend's card, a snoozer for most of the fight, but near the end, a lot of fireworks. Randall Bailey, the knockout over Mike Jones. Was that the knockout of the year?
It's pretty close. I mean, that one, Alan Green, Mikkel Kessler's right there with it, but I think the drama in Bailey Jones makes it even better. I mean, you know, Bailey was losing. I love the story. I mean, I've been watching Randall Bailey for years. I watched him when he fought DeMarcus Corley years ago. I remember his war with Diobelis Hurtado, where both guys were on the deck. He's always been a fun guy to watch, and for him at almost 40 years old to pick up a belt against a young, undefeated guy, that's one of the better stories of the year. And, I mean, he can still crunch. I mean, he's one of those freaks like Ernie Shavers where, you know, he might not do a lot of things right in the ring, but if he catches you right, it's nap time.
And will we see Bailey? I know he's called out Devin Alexander on some level. Will we see Bailey Alexander August 18th?
I'm not sure. You might. I mean, you might. That's another Randall Bailey could end up being another option for Tim Bradley, too. I mean, that would be a way for Tim Bradley to try to, you know, unify two belts in the division, you know, stay busy. So, I mean, Randall Bailey could fit in as an opponent for a lot of guys because you look at Randall Bailey as a beatable guy with a belt. But, right. You know, his punch will always keep him in a fight.
Definitely. And talk about some of the great things going on at BoxingScene.com.
Well, right today we got the fight previews for tonight. Adam X Chambers, Chavez Lee. Keep an eye out in the next couple of days. We're gonna have a big. I'll have a big preview up. There's a big fight way off the U.S. radar, but over in Japan, the first ever unification fight between two Japanese fighters, a couple of 105-pound fighters, Kazuto Aoka, whose uncle was a two-weight division world champion, versus a guy named Akira Higashi, who won the real fight of the year last year. This sensational. War in Japan with this guy from Thailand named Porpromukh. If you have YouTube, look it up. It was absolutely epic fight. They're going to have a unification fight. It's a big deal in Japan, and for fans out there who have YouTube, you know, keep an eye. By Wednesday night, it'll probably be up. And Kazuto Aoka has only had about 9 professional fights. If he unifies, I think it's the earliest any fighter has ever unified two belts. This could be a really special fighter in the flyweight division.
Cliff. A pleasure as always. Wish you nothing but the best of luck. And as always, let's do it again.
Absolutely, Paul. Keep in touch, buddy.
All right. Cliff Rolds, BoxingScene.com. Great writer. It's a great website, especially if you love the sport of boxing like I do. And real quickly now, speaking of the sport of boxing, Floyd Mayweather tried and was unsuccessful, tried to get out of prison early, stated that his doctor felt that he was losing muscle mass. If he stayed in prison any longer, it could affect his career, the rest of his career. And so ultimately the judge denied it and probably was the right decision. I mean, they already delayed his sentence 6 months. And I can't imagine. I mean, prison is not supposed to be a great thing. It's not supposed to be a hotel. It's not supposed to be a penthouse. It's not supposed to be a good time. So it is what it is with Floyd Mayweather. But, hey, it doesn't hurt to try if you're Floyd Mayweather. Who knows what could happen. But ultimately, nothing happened, and Floyd Mayweather will remain in prison moving forward. We want to thank Thomas Davis of the Carolina Panthers for stopping by. Make sure you support some of the great things that he is doing in the community, and also make sure you follow him on Twitter. Also, we want to thank Cliff Rold of BoxingScene.com for stopping by. Great to get his insight on the fight, and make sure you go to BoxingScene.com to support some of the great things that he has going on. At BoxingScene.com, a great, great, great website, especially for those who love boxing. Great website, great resource, a lot of great writers, a lot of great things going on at that website, boxingscene.com. Make sure you support it. Make sure you support Cliff Rold there at boxingscene.com. Also, Thomas Davis, make sure you follow him on Twitter at TD58SDTM. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can follow the show on Twitter at Go4Gant. For everybody here at Go4, have a great weekend. See you later. Take care. Bye.